Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here, not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Professor Albert Burkstahler, who's a professor, retired professor of chemistry at the University of Kansas, but he's the editor of Fluoride Magazine, and I've asked him to come on and talk to us today about what's going on with water fluoridation, and of course the fact that the American people really are not getting the truth about the dangers of that. Professor, thank you so very much for being with us.
Yes, I'm glad to be
Professor,
on your program.
Professor, are you there? Well, I hope we're going to have... Professor, are you there or not?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well,
can you hear me?
I think we're going to have to... I'm going to ask my producer to call the professor back again. We may have lost him.
Well, I hear you.
So would you mind calling professor back again? And we had a little accident here in the studio. I overturned one of our telephones. So if we could... let's see. He hears you. I hear him. All right, fine. Would you mind calling him back? I just disconnected him, and we'll have to find out what's going on here, why I can't hear anything. Let's just... I'm going to play a little music and just make sure everything's in... playing all right here. All right, fine. Well, I think that's just a little short, and perhaps we can get our engineer in here so we can get this thing fixed up so I can hear. All right, fine. Well, apparently, Professor, are you there? Well, we're going to get this thing, if somebody could get our engineer here, I'd certainly appreciate it. Professor, are you there? All right, well, we'll be back in just a moment here. And Professor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Okay,
okay,
let's hope we can get this thing straightened out. Anyway, you've been studying fluoride for an awful long time, haven't you?
Well, since about the early 1960s, yes.
Beg pardon?
Since the early 1960s.
All right, I'm going to ask my producer if they'd please get the engineer over here so we can get this thing fixed, because we're just cutting in and out. But, Professor, you actually are the editor of the magazine on fluoride?
Yes, I'm the editor of the journal Fluoride. It's a quarterly scientific journal. As an international editorial board, and we have regular meetings about once every year or two. Our next meeting will be in Wiesbaden, Germany. Our last one was in Dunedin, New Zealand.
Well, now, of course, then chemists and scientists all across the world are concerned about the dangers of fluoride, aren't they?
That's correct. Of course, the public health people don't see it that way.
Well, of course, do they have a different agenda? Certainly, you would think that they would rely upon the chemists, the people who've done the studies. Certainly, they've published studies to show the disastrous effects of fluoride and fluoridated drinking water on our population, aren't there?
Well, those studies exist, but the people in dental research and dental public health generally are unaware of them or pay no attention to them. They don't pay much stock in them. It's a very difficult problem scientifically to find that the dental research literature does not show much benefit from fluoridation for reducing tooth decay and causes a great deal of dental fluorosis, a harmful effect on the teeth. The other side, the medical side effects, are largely ignored in the dental literature.
All right, you hang on there. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here today. Our guest today is Professor Albert Burkstahler, who is a professor of chemistry of the emeritus at the University of Kansas. And, of course, he is the editor of the magazine Fluoride. And there is tremendous amounts of literature out there that show the disastrous effects of water fluoridation on the human being, and of course the studies as far as fertility is concerned, as far as the endocrine system is concerned, certainly as far as the intelligence is concerned. There are studies that show how the profound impact on the IQ. So why are they putting this into our drinking water and harming our children?
Well, if you go back historically, it began probably at the time of the Great Depression, when tooth decay was a very big problem. And when the discovery of fluoride in drinking water came about, there was some consideration that it might reduce tooth decay significantly. However, those studies were very badly flawed, and when they were looked at closely afterwards, it's obvious that they were not looking at the other factors that should have been involved, the calcium levels in the diet, the change in dental hygiene. And when those things are factored into account, the comparisons between fluoride, non-fluoride communities show practically no difference in tooth decay. But and the proponents have just been unwilling to look at their own evidence. And then on top of that, there's been a total reevaluation of the mechanism of how fluoride affects the teeth. And that hasn't gotten into the dental public health literature or classrooms either.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I know that some of the people who have actually spoken out about this have been threatened. I've talked to Dr. Lineback up at the University of Toronto. He told me he was afraid to come on my radio program, afraid for his family, and, of course, afraid for his job. We know, of course, Dr. Marcus, who worked for the Environmental Protection Agency, lost his job there, was fired because he dared to question, the fact that they had altered studies to show that that fluoride didn't produce cancer in animals. And then Dr. Mullinex lost her job when she told the truth about the impact on the brains of animals of fluoridated water. So it's not that these people don't know. They're using threats to silence people who want to get the truth out.
Well, the fact is, though, that the dental literature that the ordinary public health official would read and the practicing dentist would not mention these things. They're kept insulated from this by and large. Our journal Fluoride, for example, has been out since 1968. We're in our 37th year of publication, and it's been excluded from Index Medicus or PubMed, which is the major National Library of Medicine indexing source. And so many people simply aren't aware of many of these reports, although chemical abstracts...
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Albert Burkstahler. Of course, he's a professor emeritus at the University of Kansas in chemistry and the editor of Fluoride Magazine. Now, how can they keep you out then of, from your magazine being listed with all the other magazines?
Well, they exclude other journals that proponents don't like. There's a review board for the National Library of Medicine that meets several times a year, and each time they decide whether to include or not include titles, and they'll go to what they call expert advisory groups, and these would be members of the Public Health Service and the American Dental Association, and of course they would look at our journal as being strictly anti-fluoride, which it's not. It's a neutral as far as scientific material is concerned. But as I was about to say, Chemical Abstracts has opened this up by including our journal and has included it all along with the coverage of papers in the PubMed, so that people have access to fluoride now, which they didn't before. And furthermore, the online networks like Google, if you go to Google, you'll find if you hit fluoride, toxicity, fluoride journal, you get really a lot of entries, many references to our papers in our journal. So it's no longer censored the way it was.
And of course, for our listeners out there, the internet, Google, and then go to the fluoride, and you'll find a fascinating
array of articles that have been published there. Go to Google and Fluoride Journal, Fluoride Toxicity, and you'll find reams of work, including these things you mentioned about effects on the IQ and a whole series of reports that have been in our journal over the last 35 years.
Well, that'll get a little bit into the IQ. I mean, what parent out there would want, of course, to lower their child's IQ? And yet there are studies that show the disastrous effects of fluoride on the IQ, on the intelligence, on the hyperactivity or the lack of hyperactivity, certainly of animals. What studies do we have on human beings that suggest that
they're... Well, the studies on human beings come mainly from China, where they've taken comparisons of low and high fluoride, moderately high fluoride villages that are comparable socioeconomically with the same lead levels in the environment, the same iodine intake. So they've got all the controls except the same, except the fact that the fluoride would be about maybe 3 or 4 tenths of a part per million in the low fluoride village and around 1.5 to 2.5 parts per million in the high fluoride village. And the IQ deficit is about an average of 10 points, with a much higher level at the retarded level and a lower level at the higher intelligence level in the high fluoride village, and vice versa for the low fluoride village. And that's not just one study. There have been about 5 different ones in China with humans, and they also are verified by rat and animal studies like Dr. Mullinex's. So they've confirmed it both ways in China.
Now, have they ever found any lesions in the brain of animals that were drinking fluoridated water?
Yes, they found disturbances of the brain, especially during the early embryonic stages, when they've looked at the early stage development of brain effects of fluoride. To the extent that it crosses the placental barrier, there is damage.
And, of course, Dr. Mullinex has studied where she actually fed rats, pregnant rats, what happened when she fed the fluoridated water to pregnant rats?
Well, I believe their offspring came out more hypoactive, less responsive, the depression of their intelligence, so to speak. And then they're fed after birth. They became a hyperactive, dependent on sex, too. The male and female rats reacted differently.
Well,
some of these differences are not always going to be seen in humans, of course.
Well, now, what happened to Dr. Mullinex, or Phyllis Mullinex, after she published this paper? Was she working at MIT or Harvard?
No, she was working at the Forsyth Dental Research Center.
Okay.
And she was brought there specifically to do computer program recognition to see subtle effects on spontaneous behavior with different drugs and things that would be used in dentistry, and one of the things she was asked to look at was fluoride, and she had no idea what she'd encounter. She worked with Dr. Pamela Denbeston, who's a dental researcher, and the two of them, when they set up their program and study, they were amazed to see the statistically very significant differences in behavior patterns for the rats pregnant, and then the offspring, and then the offspring fed with fluoride, and so on. Now, what happened was she wanted to publish this work and knew that there'd be trouble after she went to the National Institutes of Health to present a seminar on it, so she kept it from the officials as to what journal she was publishing it in, and it was peer-reviewed and accepted and published, and as soon as that happened, she was fired.
In other words,
the grounds supposedly were her research wasn't that important to the center, although they had brought her there specifically for her research. She sued and won a very good lawsuit judgment based on discrimination rather than getting into the science of it. That's a closed book that they cannot reveal the details of. But all of this is told very well in Chris Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception.
And we actually carry that book, and I think every one of our listeners needs to
get that. Well, the opening chapters tell the story very well there.
And, of course, there is an organized, in my estimation, effort to suppress information from getting out.
Well, I think they're afraid of what would happen if the cat got out of the mouse got out of it. It's a very serious situation with the standpoint of potential liability. The proponents have maintained for years, up and down, that it's absolutely safe, with no problems, mild dental fluorosis, but that's the only side effect. They have not looked at the thyroid effects, the mental effects we've just talked about, the arthritic effects on the joints and muscles, the gastrointestinal effects. There are a whole series of reversible toxic effects as well as permanent toxic effects that have been well documented now and are simply being ignored.
Well, are the metal changes, are they reversible, or is this a permanent damage?
I think they've seen some evidence in China that there's slight reversibility, but not a whole lot. It's not going to be the sort of thing that would restore a low IQ to an average or high IQ. There might be just a few points going up, but that's all.
My understanding is that the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons has now, American Academy of Pediatrics has come out and suggested that children not be given any fluoride at all if they're less than 6 months of age. Is that true?
That's true, and Canada was pioneering that even before we did. They were looking mainly at dental fluorosis, but the fact is so much fluoride in baby foods and diets that anything beyond that, like making a baby formula with fluoridated water, would give two or three times more fluoride than the child would be expected to tolerate.
And yet, of course, I got a call within the last 2 weeks from a woman who told me that her pediatrician was giving her three-month-old child vitamins with fluoride in it.
Oh, yes, and then those children get colic, very upset stomachs, they're crying, and the parents don't understand why they're such unruly or unhappy babies. And I had a great grandniece up in Lansing, Michigan, who was a mother was giving these fluoridated vitamins, and her mother, my sister, said, "Well, Martha, why don't you just stop the fluoridated vitamins and see what happens?" And within a couple of days, the baby became very placid and happy and normal, and she was just amazed. And here the pediatrician had been recommending the fluoridated vitamins that were causing the problem. When the fluoride gets into the stomach, the acidity of the stomach forms hydrofluoric acid, which is very corrosive to tissues and can cause irritation, and that's why people can be very upset with the fluoride in the vitamins at that low level of 1 milligram or half a milligram per day.
Well, you know, Chris, the frightening thing is that I don't think that the average pediatrician, I don't think the average dentist has ever heard the truth about the toxic effects.
Well,
of
they're not blood. Going to, because if you look at their textbooks, they're just nothing but glowing support and praise, and the same thing is true, unfortunately, of the freshman chemistry textbooks and biochemistry books used at the undergraduate level. It's an education problem of a very serious dimension, in my opinion, and even environmental chemistry and environmental science books seldom bring out the truth about the fluoride and environmental pollution or the reported side effects and problems of fluoridated water.
Well, now, what about the effect on fertility? What about the effect, on the testosterone level? What about the effect on the male sperm? Does this attack fertility?
Yes, there's pretty good evidence that it does. The question is, to what extent? If you go to Google, you'll find a report coming right up under fluoride toxicity from Dr. Sushila in India, who has reported on this lowering of testosterone levels in a recent report. And there are other reports even from the United States showing a reduced fertility in the areas of higher fluoride in the water than in the areas with lower fluoride. So it's a phenomenon that may not be fully quantified at this point, but it certainly seems to be very real, both in animal studies and human epidemiological studies.
What about in animal studies as far as miscarriages or stillbirths? Do we have any idea?
It seems to require higher levels in rodents for that to occur, and that's one of the problems of using rats and mice as laboratory models, because they're less sensitive to fluoride than humans. On the other hand, guinea pigs show a great deal of sensitivity. It's more comparable to the levels we would use in human exposure.
All right. So now what about the effect on the thyroid?
Well, I had a personal experience with that, and that's what really got me into this thing. Back around 1956, when I came to Lawrence, I was a very happy, energetic young chemist, and within a few years, I found myself waking up feeling very tired with aching joints. Went to my doctor, and I said, "What is wrong?" He said, "Well, we better check your thyroid function." He did a basal metabolism test and found it was minus 22, and I said, "Well, what does that mean?" He said, "Well, it's low, and you should have some thyroid supplements." Well, I took the supplements, but couldn't see any effect of them. And meanwhile, I was noticing that I was constantly thirsty and waking up thirsty and having these same problems I mentioned. And then in the course of my research, we got into looking at some synthesis of fluorinated amino acids for some biochemical studies, and that got me looking into some literature on fluoride and thyroid. And I found that when the levels of intake are around 4 to 5 milligrams a day, there's usually a lowering of the thyroid function. I thought, oh my gosh. And I quickly switched to non-fluoridated water. And I was amazed because within a matter of days, I began to feel more alert. My aching joints disappeared and a whole series of things cleared up. I stopped taking the thyroid extract. And I came to my doctor after 3 months and said, how about checking my basal metabolism? I've been doing something different. I didn't tell him what it was.
Hold that thought for just a moment.
One tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. This, our guest this afternoon is Professor Albert Burkstahler, who is Professor Emeritus of Chemistry at the University of Kansas, the editor of Fluoride Magazine. And I would like to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that there is an organized effort to fluoridate all the water in the state of California. About 67% of the water in the United States is fluoridated today. And, of course, they want to fluoridate everybody's water. But, Dr. Burkstaller, we get fluoride from all sorts of other things, from the toothpaste, from the vegetables, from the soft drinks we drink. Isn't there fluoride permeate every aspect of our society to the point where we're really getting a fluoride toxicity?
Well, yes. But a lot of the food that's processed with fluoridated water would not have so much fluoride if ordinary non-fluoridated water were used. Fluoride air pollution has been cut considerably in recent years, and that's been a benefit. But on the other hand, there's fluoride in many of the fertilizers, and that gets into the crops that way. So we've got a food source that's augmented by fluoridated water, and there'd be a great reduction of fluoride intake if water fluoridation were stopped. I wanted to finish what I was saying about the thyroid.
All right, please.
When I went back to the doctor after 3 months, he checked my thyroid function and was right at normal, zero, which means it was neither high nor low. And I told him what I did, and he said, I'm not too surprised. But on the other hand, he wouldn't make any move toward the members of the county medical society to tell him of this. And I got kind of disturbed about the fact that he was reticent and unwilling to explore this further, because all I did was switch to non-fluoridated water and the thyroid function bounced back to normal.
Well, now what about the fluoride in our toothpaste? Do we get enough absorbed from using fluoridated toothpaste and brushing our teeth a couple of times a day?
Yes, there's quite a bit, as much as maybe 25% is swallowed by adults and maybe 50% or more by children. And that can be a pretty hefty dose because those toothpaste run about 1,000 to 1,500 parts per million or milligrams per kilogram of fluoridated toothpaste, and that extra intake, brushing your teeth several times a day, can be considerable. And that's why dental fluorosis can form in young children who use fluoridated toothpaste. There's another point about this, though, that's been overlooked. The topical action of fluoride on the teeth to promote better resistance to tooth decay is fallacious, because what's necessary is enough calcium in the saliva. And the reason many studies have failed to show any benefit from fluoride is because the calcium levels in the control comparison populations were not high enough. And where they've shown benefit, it's usually because the improved, better diet with more calcium in those places. So I don't think fluoride in the toothpaste or in the water does much good at all. It might have a catalytic effect to promote remineralization of the tooth enamel topically if there's enough calcium present, but that's very dubious in my opinion.
Well, doesn't it really, fluoridated toothpaste really work because it kills the bacteria, isn't it?
Well, that would be part of it, but the main mechanism they want for maintaining enamel integrity is a remineralization before demineralization occurs and gets out of hand. I don't think we have a clear picture of just how fluoride works on the teeth externally or topically. We have a better picture when it's taken in systemically, and then we have the fluorosis of the teeth occurring during the laying down of the enamel layers, imperfectly formed, and extra layers of calcium and fluoroapatite that are different from the normal pattern in the tooth enamel, and that creates this mottling, this uneven striation in the appearance of the teeth.
That's with dental fluorosis, then.
Dental fluorosis. And it gets stained at times, too, to yellowish and brownish colors.
But, of course, the thing is that if it's coming out in the teeth, isn't it also a high enough level to do damage in the body?
That's right. And if it's causing that much damage visibly to the teeth, you can be sure that there's going to be other effects going on in the joints and bone formation. And then some of the organs, depending on their sensitivity. And, you know, genetic factors and dietary factors can make a big difference in the toxicity of fluoride.
Well, now, Chris, what about Europe? My understanding is that the Europeans either didn't fluoridate in most countries, or those where they did fluoridate, they've stopped it to the point where, and they have just as good dentition as we do, don't they?
That's right. Fluoridation has only been experimented with in a few places in Europe, and most of them have stopped except in England and Ireland. And they found that the tooth decay did not increase after fluoridation was stopped in Holland or Finland and Germany. And as a result, they don't really have any proof that it was needed. Furthermore, as you just pointed out, the whole dental picture in Europe generally, with dental hygiene and diet and so forth, is such that they don't have more tooth decay without fluoridation than we do in this country with fluoridation. In fact, in many of the European countries, the tooth decay rates are less.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Professor Albert Burgstahler talking about fluoridation and the problems we're really seeing with it today.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we want to just mention that we do carry the Big Berkey of water filters. Of course, we have the Big Berkey, we have the Imperial Berkey, and of course, we have, I guess, three various sizes of the Big Berkeys. And, of course, for the average family, why the Big Berkey is quite adequate, but you've got a great big family, you want to get the Imperial or one of the larger ones. But anyway, they certainly work with ceramic filters filled with activated carbon, and you can boil those repeatedly if they start not functioning quite so well, the water doesn't taste quite so well. We're, of course, then we also have here in California, the only thing you get is the Berkey Light, and those filters have to be replaced every couple of years. But the significant thing is with both of these, you can put on post filters, and those post filters will actually take out the fluoride and the arsenic and the lead. You need, of course, to get these things out of your diet. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask about Big Berkey. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Albert Burgstahler, and we've got Robert calling in from Illinois. Hi, Robert, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, hi, Dr. Stan. My question would be, what would your guests recommend as far as filtering fluoride out of your drinking water?
All right, do you have any thoughts on how we can get it in? Because so many communities, they actually have the fluoride in the drinking water, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, from my chemical experience, I know that a good distillation setup works, and also reverse osmosis. I don't think the exchange methods, the filtering methods, are too reliable unless they're quite elaborate, because you can get down to about one part per million fluoride with many of these filters, but not much less than that, whereas with the distillation, you can get it down to about 1/100th of a part per million, and with reverse osmosis to about 0.05 of a part per million.
All right, fine. Does that answer your question, Robert?
Another question then would be, as far as drinking water from companies that sell spring water, You know.
Well, you have to check to see whether the spring water is low in fluoride, because some of them are surprisingly high. Most of them are fairly low, but there's one from Colorado that I checked some years ago, and it was 3.8 parts per million.
Now, boy, you shouldn't want to drink that much. That'll really do play havoc with your brain.
Right.
Anything else, Robert?
Legiswood, wasn't it the case that was it the fluoride that was used in the gas chambers in Germany and all that?
I'm not sure whether they used fluoride-containing compounds for those chambers or not. I know they've developed fluorine-containing nerve gases since World War II, but I'm not sure about the kinds of gases they were. I thought they were using cyanide mainly.
Well, actually, of course, sarin gas has a fluoride base.
Yeah, was it used at that time? I'm not sure.
I wouldn't want to hazard a guess. Maybe somebody out there in the listening audience would know. Okay, fine. Thanks so very much. Okay. Anything else, Robert?
That's all for now, then.
All right, fine. Well, we'll go ahead. We have Ken calling in here in just a minute. So go ahead if we can get... Hi, Ken. How are you doing? Where are you calling from?
This is Ken in Watsonville.
Okay, fine.
I wanted to ask the doctor, professor, since he's a chemist. I am chemically ill, well, the petrochemical industry, and in the state of California, neurotoxins and toxins and so forth do not exist in the respect for law and getting compensation or such. Now, did you know about this? Proposition 65 does not cover neurotoxins. They only cover cancer and such.
I didn't know that.
All right. So
in the petrochemical industry, for hydroforming to make gasoline, high quality gasoline, hydrogen fluoride has been used for a long time, and there have been accidents with it, and many workers have had some very severe problems with it.
May I have some way to contact you off air?
Well, of course, you call me off the air, and I can get you in touch.
Right. Now, I'm at the University of Kansas, by the way.
University
Lawrence, Kansas.
All right. Okay, Ken, what sort of chemicals were you exposed to?
I was in the plastics division of a major player now that has gotten out of the plastics division, but I was exposed to solvents,
all right,
which are neurotoxins, and on down the line, and there are several other epithets that are the same way, and then across the United States, it's the same way.
Okay, thanks very much. You call me off the air, Ken, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay,
our telephone number, if you're out across America, you'd like to talk to Professor Burkstahler, the telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, we've already talked about how fluorides attack the thyroid. What about other endocrine functions? Is there an attack on the other endocrine functions that we know of?
Well, I'm not a biochemist, so I would be hesitant to say too much more about that. There have been quite a few studies we've published in our journal over the years showing effects on liver function and kidney function.
Now, what happens to liver?
Those are not the endocrine that you're talking about.
Well, what about liver and kidney? What does it do to liver and kidney?
Well, it acts to... how to put it this way? It creates a problem of stress on the antioxidant systems. The protective factors are impaired with fluoride.
Now, of course, it's the antioxidants that protect us from cancer, isn't it?
Right, right. And so fluoride, in that way, creates stress on those organs. The pituitary is one organ that seems to accumulate... the pineal gland. The pineal gland is one that accumulates fluoride extensively, and that seems to cause a disruption in the time of menarche, when girls will start menstruating. That has been verified in animal studies, and that's a fairly new finding because the amount of fluoride accumulation in the pineal gland turns out to be quite large with calcification, but it does interfere with the function, and that also, of course, controls sleep patterns and melatonin production.
All right. What about the relationship to cancer? Has there any been shown or suggestions of a relationship between water fluoridation and cancer?
Well, yes. Studies were published back in the 1970s comparing fluoridated, non-fluoridated communities. I looked at these rather closely, and I have somewhat mixed feelings about the validity of those studies because the populations The fluoridated cities were declining, and that would mean more older people, the higher exposure to cancer anyway, and the non-fluoridated cities were mostly cities that were growing in population. So there was a demographic complication in those data. But even taking that into consideration, it looked like the people over age 45 had a statistically higher incidence of cancers overall. Now, when these are pinned down a little bit more, esophageal cancer is higher, and then, of course, the cancer in young men, an osteosarcoma, bone cancer, that seems to be very well established now, and that's verified with animal studies. So there are at least some forms of cancer which do show a relationship to fluoride, and depending on the kind of cancer it is.
All right, let's go to Dave, who's calling from Indiana. Hi, Dave, do you have a question?
Basically, I've been aware of this problem with fluoridation for a long time, and I have been using distilling my own water for some time, but what I found was that the cost of distillation would make the cost per gallon around 25 cents because of the amount of electricity that it used.
That's right.
It turns out that there is a company called Ovation Products in Nashua, New Hampshire, that's developed a distiller that is extremely efficient and distills water, so they say, at the cost of 1/2 cent per gallon.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Because well,
it's got energy to transform the liquid water to the vapor, and that is something that's fixed thermodynamically. It's about 500 and some calories per gram, which is quite a bit of energy.
Well, Dave, why don't you check it out and then give us a call
well,
back, okay?
Well, you know, I have tried to talk to these people for, been trying for 2 years to find out what they sell these units for, and they will never respond with any information about price for selling.
Well, that
or
sounds very suspicious, because thermodynamically and chemically, you can't escape the energy need to convert water liquid to water vapor and then condense it back to liquid again. That would give energy off, and if they're capturing that energy released in the condensation phase, that may be one way they can help save some of the initial input energy.
Well, Dave, if they won't tell you anything, well, I sure wouldn't put much confidence in what they're saying. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. And, of course, what about the effect on bone? Because, of course, I was an orthopedic surgeon for many years, and I remember reading those articles that there was almost a doubling of the incidence of hip fractures in both elderly and postmenopausal women and in men in areas where they had fluoridated water.
That's right. And, again, I say these studies are complicated because dietary factors can make a big difference as to whether you're going to have a proper bone formation and calcification. And the fluoride interferes with the normal bone formation and growth, causes abnormal bone growth, and that it does make the bone more susceptible to fracture, brittleness, and less tensile strength. We've had quite a few interesting studies published in our journal in recent years pointing out the deleterious effects of fluoride at different levels in bone studies.
I know, of course, did the fluoride go into the hydroxyapatite, which is the
It replaces the hydroxyl group with a fluorine and forms fluoroapatite,
right,
which is a little bit different in character and density, but I think it's the interference with the general cell pattern for bone formation. The fact that the bone becomes more brittle and more easily fractured, same way with the teeth, that is a characteristic of fluoroapatite, as opposed to the more flexible structure is the hydroxyapatite.
Well, are the teeth actually more brittle, if they have drinking fluoridated water?
Well, it depends. Sometimes they say there's more wearing away of the enamel, and that might make you think that the teeth are softer. But in areas of higher fluoride, the teeth tend to be more brittle and chip, and they can't hold fillings.
Well, now, what about this idea that that the fluoride seems to influence the time when the teeth come in, so that they can, of course, come up with these statistics, and they say, well, you know, there are less cavities in these people, children, but part of that is because they don't have teeth. In other words, the teeth, the secondary teeth are slowed down. Is
the eruption of the teeth is certainly controlled by thyroid to a great extent. And in the earlier studies, it was shown that when the fluoride supplements were given, the teeth did come into the mouth later, by 6 months or a year or even more. Currently, with so much fluoride in the diet and general environment, we don't see those differences as much as we did at one time. But you're right. If the mouth that you're comparing in a fluoridated community has fewer teeth or fewer erupted teeth than the children of the same age in a non-fluoridated area, then obviously you're going to have more exposure, more tooth decay in the non-fluoride area. This is a point that's been overlooked in a lot of studies. They're comparing chronological age rather than tooth age for these studies.
Well, now, what about the some of these studies that have come out of Turkey and other countries where they have very high levels of fluoride in the water, and it almost seems like there's premature aging and infirmity of the people. Have you looked into that at all?
Yes, I've seen those reports. In fact, we've got quite a few papers in a hopper from Turkey now studying these effects on populations and animals over there. Very interesting work coming out of Turkey.
Now, how high are the water levels?
Some of the highest levels are around 4 or 5 parts per million. I think Isparta is one of the communities that has that problem, but it varies in different sections of those communities because the wells and the water supplies are not all uniform. Similar problems are found in China and in India, also in certain parts of Africa, and in other parts of the Middle East. So there are many places in the world that have natural fluoride levels of the order of 2, 3, 4 parts per million that cause a great deal of crippling skeletal fluorosis, where the spinal column gets very fused, the joint movement in the elbows and the shoulders and the hips and legs become very rigid, and these people are very much impaired in their ability to do things. And it's a terrible thing to see the cases of skeletal fluorosis in some of these communities.
And of course, if you look at the bones, why they're sort of chalky white in there, and of course the bones begin to bend, and you get all sorts of deformities and overgrowth. And overgrowth of the bone is really a problem, isn't
it? Exostoses, yes.
Well, how are we going to convince the medical profession, because both the doctors and the dentists and the public health officials all seem to have a vested interest in being wrong? I don't think most of these people would want to do things that would hurt our children and lower their IQs and give them dental fluorosis and give them soft bones and, of course, give some of them cancers and all the other problems we've talked about, the thyroid problems that we're talking about. And yet, we're really, in essence, aren't we poisoning people all across America?
Well, I think we are, but it's hard to convince the top leaders in the field of scientific journals and the public health that they could be wrong. It's a hard thing for them to admit that the data they've built their endorsements on was very weak, and as new research has come along for the last 40 or 50 years, many of those findings have been overturned.
Well, of course, Chris Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception, which we do carry, incidentally, suggests that that one of the big problems is that some of the big manufacturers of aluminum and certainly of fertilizers and the government, developing the uranium, they have a vested interest in concealing the truth from the American people, and they have these toxic substances they have to get rid of that have arsenic and lead in them and fluoride, and so that's why they're putting them in the water.
Well, that's true. That started way back in the 1950s or so. I've read Chris Bryson's book very carefully. In fact, I was even involved with the vetting of it. We had a very favorable review of it in Chemical and Engineering News this summer in August, and you can't say that the American Chemical Society is supporting fluoridation. But these manufacturers and the parts of the atomic energy industry with using fluorine compounds and so forth, my feeling is that the people in dentistry are just too embarrassed to start looking at the possibility that they're wrong. I think they feel a very uneasy situation that would create terrific liability problems. And for my money, I think it's as I mentioned earlier, the education, starting in the college chemistry courses, it's off base. We've got this cover-up going on through the environmental courses, the biochemistry courses, and so on. Then the students get to the medical schools and dental schools and public health training. That myth is simply perpetuated.
And really, what a terrible tragedy is, you know, our children, our young people, can't really compete with children throughout the rest of the world academically.
Noticed that in the science fair, science exams, the international chemistry competitions and so on. We don't do nearly as well as we should.
Do you think maybe we're just doing damage to the brains of our children?
Well, certainly some of them. I think there are always exceptions, and many people that, for one reason or another, rise above it all. But the total impact overall is very bad, because the students aren't doing as well in mathematical and scientific subjects as they should, and overall it's a very awkward picture. I know as I taught over the years, our standards for teaching were continually going down, because the grade inflation was a big problem, and there were other factors too, but I just don't think we're holding our students to the high levels of scientific learning that we should.
But are they capable of learning, do you think?
That may be the problem. We find that they can't seem to learn as fast and retain as well as they should.
And where is the outcry from our parents across America? Well, I hope that we can get you onto some of our other programs. We have four different audiences. I want everybody to hear your message, because I think everybody should be concerned. The minds of our children, the IQs of our children, I believe, are under attack today. Our guest has been Professor Albert Burgstaller. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Four tapes set on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we were just talking about the JFK assassination, and of course if you have not heard our four tape set on the JFK assassination, you really need to. And then of course we have an JFK assassination update. We'll actually hear my interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, who was the mistress, Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she talks about the meeting beforehand, the night beforehand, when they were actually planning on how the murder was going to be carried out, and she tells you who was there. It's a fascinating four tape set. Then we, of course, have that's the two four tape sets. Then we actually offer two books. We have a JFK case one of them, of course, the book is a sniper looks at Dealey Plaza. The other is Regicide, supposedly based upon the writings of a man from the CIA who planned the murder, and gives you the whole background of what exactly happened. So we have two books, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, and then, of course, Regicide. And then, of course, we have two four tape sets, JFK Assassination, JFK Assassination Update. You're not going to get information like this any other place. And, of course, if they could get away with killing an American president, and, of course, no repercussions, nobody was ever, of course, prosecuted for this. After all, it was just an isolated lone gunman. Lee Harvey Oswald, a lone nut. No, he was a CIA asset. In fact, George de Moorenschelt, who was his mentor, his handler, my friend Bruce Adamson has gone into de Moorenschelt's address book, and who do we find there? Lyndon Johnson, we find George Herbert Walker Bush. Fascinating information, it's all available, but you've got to look for it. And if they can get away with that, why, no man's life or family or future are safe today. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we've got a great new video. It's called Megiddo 2. I don't know who that member. We had Megiddo 1, the March to Armageddon by Chris Pinto. We have Megiddo 2 now, a great, great video going into the overall background behind the spiritual battle that we're engaged in today. We were up until 12:30 last night watching Megiddo 2. It is a magnificent production, beautifully done, artistically done. If you haven't got Megiddo 1, it goes into the background of the plan for the three world wars that will, of course, bring about this one world government. Megiddo 2 gives you the background of the dark spiritual forces. And, well, I hate to say it, but I'm actually in Megiddo 2. One reason I think it's a great video, but not because I'm in it, but because the producer, Chris Pinto, has done a magnificent job. He's a student of Pastor Joe Schimmel, who has done the 3, 4, or 10-hour versions of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You need to get those videos. You need to show them to your children. You need to show them to your grandchildren. You need to understand there is a satanic movement in the United States today, and it works through much of it, through rock music, the same sort of music they're bringing into the Christian church today. We have a 4-tape set on musical madness. We have a book called The Crisis in Christian Music. We have a 4-tape set on the apostate church, the movement within the church today. We have a video called Diaprax. All of these things are trying to get you to understand that they're changing the music and they're changing the message of the Christian church, and they're using encounter groups in our churches today. In the name of studying the Bible, they're really aimed at changing your outlook on the world. You need to understand how this all fits together. So let me start with the videos of Megiddo 1, and of course with excellent, excellent video. And Megiddo 2 is just out right now. It's 3 hours long, and you will be enthralled, as we were. My wife and I were up, as they say, until 12:30 last night, watching this magnificent production. Giving you an understanding of how this battle began in the Garden of Eden, and it comes right up to what's going on today. And of course, it shows you the occult forces at work, first of all, within the Nazi movement, now within America, every level of society. And then, of course, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of the 4-tape set on the church growth movement, the 4-tape set on musical madness, the 4-tape set on the apostate church, the 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley, the 4-tape set on Satanism and deliverance. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, Satan is alive and well, and he has his disciples working at every level of our society. Today, we carry a great book that goes into the Led Zeppelin, the music group that produced the album The Stairway to Heaven, the most popular album ever produced, and these people were all Crowleyites. They were into Satanism, they were into black metal, and of course you really want to get the 4-tapes on an Aleister Crowley, but the book Fallen Angel really gives you a tremendous insight into what this is really all about. So the information is there, and you have to help us get it out. Of course, my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, is the best overall, very short, concise approach to what's going on. All of these items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to get our 4-tape set on water fluoridation. You need to get my November newsletter. We'll send you one free of charge if you don't belong to the Radio Liberty family or subscribe to our newsletter, but you need to have our November newsletter because it gives you the background of everything we talked about today. You need to get Chris Bryson's work, The Fluoride Deception. You need to get Russell Blaylock's book, The Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Because, ladies and gentlemen, they're poisoning you and your children. And I'm not saying this lightly. I'm saying this with all seriousness. You need our 4-tape set on aspartame, our 4-tape set on mercury. You need the videos that goes with these 4-tape sets. You have to get the information and help us get it out. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.